coming up on The Source. They come from the worst war-torn parts of the world, live for years in refugee camps, and then end up in San Antonio. Refugees from Asia, Africa, and the Middle East with very little English proficiency, limited government services, and expected to somehow make it in America.
I do think, though, it is difficult to be thrust into a different country and be expected to go off and running, you know, in 3 to 4 months learning a different language. I think it's a struggle.
They're very proud, they're hardworking, and I think they're shamed by having to receive assistance and at the same time not be able to provide for themselves and their families.
Are international refugees being set up to fail when they're dumped in San Antonio? What challenges do they face to achieve the American dream? That's coming up on The Source, but first, the news. This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Their accounts of violence, oppression, and danger will astonish you, but not more than their determination to survive and thrive. Every year, San Antonio sees hundreds of refugees settled in our city, strangers in a strange land. How well are these lost people getting along? A special project from the UTSA Advanced Policy Social Work Master's class wanted to find out and inform the city. Graduate students in UTSA's Department of Social Work are hosting an In a Place of Refuge, Many Stories, One Goal, a refugee awareness event at 6 p.m. December the 7th at UTSA's downtown campus. Joining me in the studio to talk about the struggles of local refugees, Cassandra Bright Salcedo, a student of the University of Texas at San Antonio's Master's Social Work Program, and Professor Robert Ambrosino, who teaches the UTSA Advanced Policy Social Work Master's class. They interviewed local refugees to get their stories and discover how they can be helped.
In the year 2010, we had about 54,000 come into the United States. In that same year, about 7,900 came to Texas and 800 to San Antonio.
So these are refugees from where who are coming to San Antonio?
These refugees are coming from Afghanistan, Bhutan in Asia, Burma also in Asia, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa, Cuba, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Iraq, Iran, Liberia, Somalia, and Sri Lanka. Those are the majority of the countries they are coming from.
So we're seeing hundreds of people who are coming to San Antonio every year who are coming from conflict zones. And before they came to San Antonio, I can imagine they spent time in refugee camps. Is that right?
That's correct. They spent their time in refugee camps, some for many years, decades even. They spent their time there in the camps. Their camps are crowded. There's disease there. There's very limited food. The situations there are also very unsafe. Sometimes they're having challenges of using their time. Even some are beaten and raped, unfortunately. They spend many years in these camps before they're able to travel to another country permanently.
And before they even got to the refugee camp, they were victims of war, fleeing from a conflict zone. These are people who have seen some horrific things, lived horrific episodes that I couldn't even imagine. And now they're being deposited in San Antonio, in cities like San Antonio around the country. What services are being provided for these folks?
Well, they're in the refugee camps, and like I said, they're there for many years. They're referred to the U.S. for resettlement out of those camps. That's by the United Nations and High Commissioner for Refugee Services. They do go through a health screening. Their information is received. They have a face-to-face interview by the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services Office. They're going to likely be resettled with relatives or family, but some are not. Some don't have any family here at all. There's also receive a brief United States cultural orientation prior to entry.
Do they get jobs? What do they do when they get here? How do they work? Most of them don't even speak English.
When they come here to San Antonio, a lot of them barely speak English. They're given a brief orientation before coming here to the United States to help them with their English. But like you said, a lot of them barely speak any English. They start in entry-level positions, maybe in hotels or in restaurants. But many of the refugees that come here, a lot of them do have degrees, medical degrees, but they're forced into these lower-paying positions. just because of the challenges they do face with language issues.
So, Professor, we're here talking about the refugees in San Antonio and the challenges they face and some of the myths that we have about refugees. And this is something that you tackled in your class at the University of Texas at San Antonio. It was the policy advocacy class. Okay, the policy advocacy class.
Right.
So tell me about the class and why y'all took this on.
Okay, the class is a class for advanced social work students. So these are students in about ready to graduate or soon to graduate. Each one of the classes in our program has what we call a competency assignment. And the competency assignment for this class is to develop and carry out a policy advocacy campaign. Most often that is a public awareness campaign. And the students select the population and the issue that they would like to address, and then the students are virtually responsible for all the aspects of the project, and I provide sort of the supervision and guidance.
And so you tackled the refugees in San Antonio, and are you seeing a community that's in distress?
Absolutely. There are students, most of our students are also full-time working professionals. And so they'll work in a job where, you know, they may come across a refugee or a refugee family, and it becomes obvious to them that, you know, these families or these individuals are really struggling. But, you know, given the conditions that they come to in this country and the things that they've seen and experienced, they show up distressed. And then, you know, adding to that the struggles that they have in terms of mastering the English language and getting a decent job with benefits just adds to the problem.
Don't they get some sort of social services or some special services from the government when they arrive?
Okay. When what their resettlement agency, which here in San Antonio is Catholic Charities, they have case managers that connect the refugees and the refugee families to what used to be called food stamps, is now called the Special Nutrition Assistance Program.
SNAP,
right. They'll enroll their children in Medicaid so that they get health care services for their children. There's a variety of other kind of services that are not necessarily provided by the federal government, but they might be funded by the federal government. So, for example, the government might sponsor an English as a second language class that they take at one of the San Antonio area community colleges.
Cassandra, these people, when they show up in San Antonio, they're not being greeted, we know, with this big open arms into the land of milk and honey. There are a lot of demands on these people. They're expected to hit the ground running, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and quickly assimilate and quickly become self-sustaining, right?
That's correct. They have about 3 to 4 months of support before they actually are expected to obtain employment and be self-sustaining for themselves and their families, which is difficult. You know, you're entering a different country, trying to learn a new language. One refugee I spoke with just burned it into my mind. He said, imagine going to a different country yourself, trying to learn a new language, trying to obtain employment, and you're in this new place and trying to support your family. Just put yourself there and imagine that.
And Professor, you said that they also have the burden of having to repay the federal government for their airfare. Tell me more about that.
Well, it's a bit of a surprise to me, but when I first heard it in one of the interviews that I conducted with a refugee, I thought that can't be right. But then as I asked around with some of the other refugees that I interviewed, they all sort of confirmed that, yes, they are expected to pay back the equivalent of what I guess a one-way trip would be from their camp or the country in which the camp was located to San Antonio. And when I probed further, what I was told was that we're expected to pay this off, and if we don't, it has an impact and possibly for the actual elimination of the federal benefits that we get, which suggests to me that the payment goes back to the federal government.
And if they don't make those payments?
What they told me was then any federal benefits or assistance that they are currently receiving will be withheld.
And this can be not just for that one individual, but a family, multiple persons that need to be paid back. That could be 3,
right.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yes. The largest one I heard of was a man who has 9 children, and a wife and 9 children, and he said that he had to pay back $10,000, and that was a huge burden for him because he still did not speak English, and it was hard for him to get a decent-paying job.
We're talking to Cassandra Bright Saucedo and Professor Robert Ambrosino of the UTSA Advanced Policy Social Work Master's class. They have investigated San Antonio's refugee community and found a population in distress. We're going to have more in a minute. You're listening to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. According to the Centers for Refugee Services, just under 1,000 refugees are told each year that their new home is San Antonio. They get limited government assistance, and they're told to become self-sufficient as quickly as possible. Cassandra Bright Salcedo and Professor Robert Ambrosino of the UTSA Advanced Policy Social Work Master's class have investigated San Antonio's refugee community and found a population struggling to make these adjustments, and they have few places to turn for help. This UTSA class is holding a community town hall event called In a Place of Refuge, Many Stories, One Goal, a refugee awareness event at 6 p.m. December the 7th at UTSA's downtown campus. Now, we've heard the stories of refugees coming to the United States, getting here, and kids becoming just whizzes and becoming doctors and all these great stories. But you're telling me that is not the typical story. That is the exceptional story, right? Or what are we really seeing? What don't we see?
Oh, definitely. You have families of 7, 8, 9 coming over here to the United States, and they're dependent upon their young adolescent children to help them with everyday tasks because they pick up English more quickly. They help them with simple tasks of deciphering letters they receive in the mail, helping with prescription labels. Maybe they have trouble with instructions for their medications. They take on that extra job of assisting their family through everyday life. It's a huge burden on those children when they're also trying to integrate into the school system and also continue with their education or begin their education.
Yeah, that's a whole different other story because the children are immediately entered into the local public school system. There are some programs through communities and schools that try to assist the refugee children and help them make the adjustment. But still, they're also being thrown in the deep end of the pool and being expected to adapt, right?
Absolutely.
What happens? I mean, is there a dropout issue with refugees? Do they decide, I can't make it? Or what's happening there? What are the results?
I haven't heard of a dropout issue. I know there are integration services available for the refugees. I just, from what I've heard through my interviews with the refugees, is that they have a huge burden on them. It's a huge challenge to assist their family. They're sort of taking on more of a parental role with their parents, more of a role reversal or what have you of the family.
And I can imagine in these traditional family hierarchies, that can be a very difficult thing to for the family, even more stressed than they're accustomed to.
That could be very challenging, especially for the father, more patriarchal figure, just now having to rely on his teenage daughter to help him, like I said, through everyday tasks. It's very difficult for that person to take on that role of needing that everyday assistance.
So, Professor, you said earlier that you had heard refugees saying this, and I don't want to cast them as being ungrateful for being here. I'm sure they're grateful for being here, but they say sometimes that they would rather be back at the refugee camp than to continue their existence as it is here in San Antonio.
Yeah, I've heard that in two cases that I can speak to. One is a man who was actually now homeless, who came and exhausted his services here. who does not speak, speaks very little English, and he's also has a disability. So for him, the struggle with the uncertainty in trying to integrate into a society that is at the least difficult and perhaps sometimes hostile, he felt like he would be better off back in the, I guess, safety and security for him of the camp where there were others like him. So he said that. Another person that I interviewed said, you know, the financial burden of trying to care for my family and paying back this bill about how I got here is so crushing that some days I feel like I would have been better not even getting into this situation.
They don't have that option of going back to the camp, right? They're here. This is where they're going to stay. They've got to make it, right?
Yes. And for two reasons. I mean, one is, the government's already made some kind of investment in them. But the other is that the camps are trying to divest themselves of the refugees. And the dilemma there is there's more and more refugees, more and more people being displaced from their countries and fleeing into camps. But at the same time, the organizers in the country want the refugees to go back to their country of origin.
Is there a way to grade how well we are dealing with this population?
I think that's all tied up in our society's definition of what is self-sustaining or self-sufficient. And, you know, we fight that all the time with just our own welfare population, our domestic welfare population. And I don't think there's any kind of consensus about what is successful and what is not. What we know from a policy advocacy perspective is that we have a strong history through the Protestant work ethic in this country is that work is salvation. So I think what's happened here is it's played out again where the idea is for the refugees, get a job, in any job, and then you will have been successful, and we can step back and say we've done our job.
But then we said earlier these are people who are suffering probably from some amount of post-traumatic stress disorder because they've been brutalized and they've seen trauma and they've seen their families and loved ones probably brutally murdered in war zones. They're in a completely different culture and in a strange land where they don't speak the language, and we're expecting them to perform at a very high level. Does the general population need to have at least a level of sensitivity to what's happening with many of these with these refugees? Because, like, as you said so yourself when we were speaking earlier, that you see them at HEB sometimes, and they need help.
I would say that, yes, that's really the whole purpose of this project, which is to say, and I think it's a safe statement to say that an individual who is aware of a particular problem or the issues surrounding something will be more sensitive to perhaps identifying or participating in solution to the problem. The refugees I talked to are not looking for a handout. In fact, one of the questions I ask all of the refugees that I have interviewed is, you know, what is the single most important dream you have in America? And they say, we would like to have a home and a decent life for our children, which is really the American dream. So I've never heard one say, you know, they're very proud, they're hardworking, and I think they're shamed by having to receive assistance and at the same time not be able to provide for themselves and their families.
But, you know, if we put them on this very, you know, starvation level of assistance and never allowing them to get onto their feet where they can get up and they can run, and they're always sort of kept, you know, at that low level of never ever really being able to catch your breath, never enough oxygen in the room to get a deep breath so you can move on, that's a troubling situation. Cassandra?
It is. I do think, though, it is difficult, as I mentioned before, just to be thrust into a different country and be expected to go off and running, you know, in such a short time span. As I said, you know, in 3 to 4 months, learning a different language, I think it's a struggle learning, it's a struggle between, you know, getting off on your feet and, but pushing yourself also.
Did y'all find people who were, happy to be here, who glad they're here, that they do have an optimistic view that eventually that things are going to work out for them and that they're going to make the most of it here?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I would say that the picture, we're not trying to paint a picture that these people are, don't have any aspirations or any, interest in becoming an American. I think that that's there. The issue that we're trying to point out is that getting from here to there is very difficult. And we want to bring to attention of the public that perhaps there's something that somebody can do, or an individual person who's a member of the public can do to help out the situation. So, for example, I've been the president of a local parent-teacher association, or PTA, and what I would bring to that organization, if I were aware of this problem, is at least a discussion about what are those children facing that are now in our schools and what can we do about that, and what can we do to capitalize on the unique talents and culture and whatever that they bring to the table.
We've been talking to Cassandra Bright Salcedo and Professor Robert Ambrosino of the UTSA Advanced Policy Social Work Master's Class. They have investigated San Antonio's refugee community and found a population in distress. They're holding a community town hall called In a Place of Refuge, Many Stories, One Goal, a refugee awareness event at 6 p.m. December the 7th at UTSA's downtown campus. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Chris Udaly is our web producer. Paul Flav is in charge of TPR operations. We get production help from Catherine Dixon. I'm David Martin Davies. Check us out online at tpr.org. The Source is a production of KSTX, Texas Public Radio.